10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Oh my gosh, look at this incredible weather. What a spectacular weekend. Weather with Dr. Dave.
More news, day and night, around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your time.
You and I know about the mess in Asheville, North Carolina, the mess in the southeast caused by the hurricane, how slow our government has been to clean things up. Well, you've seen the footage out of Valencia, Spain, right? You've seen the footage out of Valencia, Spain from the floods that hit them 3 days ago. Here's an update on that report.
People, volunteers, just keep arriving with buckets, with spades, with brooms to try to help with this enormous cleanup effort. It's difficult to reach some of these areas, but people are on foot. Some of them have tied dustbin bags to their shoes to keep them out of the mud. And they say that there's a lot of anger here because they say the authorities have let them down. People are not getting enough help. Although the local authorities themselves have accused some of these volunteers of getting in the way. But as well, of course, the grim search for the missing continues. And it's feared that many more dead could be found.
Layer after layer in that one report by the BBC about the situation in Valencia, Spain. Layer after layer hit me. First of all, the official people designed to clean things up, government officials designed to clean things up, sent there to clean things up, they're annoyed that people are volunteering. They're volunteering and getting in the way. Well, I heard the same thing about Asheville. People are getting in the way. What people? People who live there who have volunteered to walk into the hip-deep mud, risk slipping and drowning, and they're shoveling the mud into the sewers. They're shoveling the mud down the street. They're doing whatever they can to save their homes, their neighborhoods, but they get in the way. Oh, they get in the way. How dare they get in the way? And then, today, there were reports of the King and Queen of Spain showing up in Valencia and the suburbs of Valencia, and they got mud thrown on them and angry people demanding an explanation as to why the warnings came 2 hours after the rains started, 2 hours after the rain started, and yet no official response. For 24 hours or more, no official response. Now, if you didn't see it, I have to take a moment and describe this to you. This wasn't like the hurricanes we had here. This was a flash flood that in a day or an hour, what was it, an hour, delivered as much rain as they would get in a year. In about an hour, they got as much rain as they would get in a year. And therefore, all of the rivers overflowed. And in the hilly terrain, when the rain came down the hill in Valencia, Spain, listen to this. When the rain came down the hill in Valencia, it came at such velocity that it swept every single car to the bottom of the hills. On every street that was on a hill, it swept every car to the bottom of the hills. Not two or three cute little cars, dozens and dozens and dozens of cars. And swept them into tunnels. If at the bottom of the street was a tunnel, it would sweep 100 cars into the tunnel. Just the force of that. Imagine the force of that. Because it wasn't just pushing one car in. It was car on top of another on top of another. Therefore, the weight of what it had to push was more and more and more with each car. You have to look it up. You have never seen destruction like this. You never, anywhere. And then at the same time, all the houses were destroyed, all of the cars were destroyed, stores, all the roadside stuff, benches, everything was destroyed for an entire town, completely wiped out. And the king and queen show up in their preppy clothes, and son of a gun, the townsfolk aren't happy. They're throwing mud at them, screaming at them. The king got a scratch on his head. Dramatic blood was pouring down his face. And rather than just say, we will get it fixed, we will get hundreds of army people, military people here to clean it up now, he's going, I know this is terrible and I empathize with you, but there's violence is never justified. Oh, yeah, I think sometimes it is. I think if they had the opportunity to warn the people of Valencia that there was flash floods coming and they didn't in time, because, you know, radio is a known technology. The ability to reach out to the population on the radio, mass cell phone calls, those emergency cell phone calls that you and I get about missing cars. Yeah, my cell phone is jammed up with there's a missing car, or a senior citizen went walking out of a senior citizen home and we're looking for them. A silver alert. Yeah, they can jam up my phone for hours with the silver alerts. Meanwhile, Grandpa went out to the back of the old people's home to smoke, and that triggered a silver alert here. But in Spain, they have the same ability. They have better cell phones than we do. Everybody has better cell phones than we do. Do you know why, by the way, everybody has better cell phones than we do? Because most other countries have one system. We have multiple systems. They're not compatible. They cross each other out. They cause all sorts of trouble. That's our problem. We believe in capitalism. But in Valencia, Spain, thousands of cars were pushed to the bottom of hills. And they were not given adequate warning. They had the information. It didn't hit them for like 2 hours till after the rain started. And then nobody showing up to help them out. That's why they're mad at the king and queen. That's why they're throwing mud at them. And the big news is, who knew that Spain still had a king and queen? It wasn't until then, just now, that I'm like, really? They have a king and queen? They don't look very regal. They look like kids from the country club. Oh, they are kids from the country club. And that takes us to our next topic. Our next topic is this. Did our government immediately send out feelers and make a public announcement that we will do everything we can do to help our allies in Spain? Spain is our friend, right? Yeah, Spain is our friend. Our students go to Madrid for exchange things. We go to their beaches. Have we announced that we're going to help them, that we're going to send aid to them, or are we just going to keep sending aid to Iran? Let's send aid to Spain, and then let's send it to Asheville. All right, look at you. Look at you. It's Sunday night. This is our friendly transition from weekend to weekday. Weekend hell of having to deal with relatives, neighbors, having to pretend to like people. That really is my hardest job. My hardest job is having to pretend to like people. I love the confines of work. I love the confines where everybody's role is defined. And if you step out of your lane, HR will step on you. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday.
On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk a little bit about crime scenes. So as a rookie cop in the police academy, they start showing you photos. They're preparing you for death. They have detectives come and talk to you about how to secure a crime scene, what to look for if a death is suspicious, not to touch anything, anyone that comes into the location to get their name, interview witnesses, and then they take you to the morgue. And like I stated earlier on this podcast, I thought it was going to be like an episode of Quincy with one guy doing an autopsy, and it looked like a Jiffy Lube with eight guys cutting. So when you go into field training, you're often given the less than desirable assignments, and it's called sitting on a DOA. So what'll happen is your supervisor will come by and say, hey, a sector car's got a DOA, you got to stay with the body. So what happens is you sit there and you wait until the medical examiner comes and they deem the death suspicious or not suspicious. Now, the detectives have already done their preliminary investigation, but you got to wait until the medical examiner says, yep, we're taking the body to the medical examiner's office for autopsy, or the body can be released to the funeral home. One of the first deaths I was involved in was, I was on a foot post. My sergeant comes by with this smile on his face. He goes, I got a special assignment for you. So he takes me to an apartment. The detectives are outside. They're interviewing witnesses. And there's a dead guy in the apartment, and he's kind of hunched over a coffee table, and there's a handgun a couple of feet away from him. And I'm just looking at it, and he goes, what do you see? And the guy had what looked like a massive head injury, so I thought it was a suicide. And he says, well, look where the gun is. And I'm looking, I'm like, okay. The gun was in front of him. He didn't just drop it and fall down. He was kind of hunched over a coffee table. He had rigor mortis, so he started to stiffen up. The detectives outside started interviewing witnesses, and what they found out was it wasn't a suicide. The guy was outside the day before. He was working on his car, and his neighbor and he got into an argument, and he was sitting down trying to line up his door. It was an old car. His neighbor grabbed him by the back of the neck, shoved his head in the door jamb, and slammed his head several times with the car door, giving the guy a massive head injury. The guy came to, cursed at the guy, went upstairs into his apartment, and everybody thought it was over. Well, what happened was, when he got into his apartment with his head injury, he grabbed a pistol. He was going to come downstairs and settle it in street court. Instead, he dropped dead of cerebral hemorrhage and collapsed on top of the coffee table. Well, downstairs, the detectives were interviewing witnesses. They found out the guy was in a dispute. They talked to his neighbor. He said, yeah, I slammed his head in the car door, and the rest is history. He was charged with murder. So for more interesting stories, check out my new book, NYPD, Laughing in the Line of Duty.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-through brew making its return, I guess. From the vault. You're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
Higginsville High Speed Chase, the people of Walmart, later, Sterling every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney on location from an Aldi grocery store.
Give me that quarter so I can put it in the hole.
This is how you get a cart, right?
I think that's what we start with, yes, honey, a cart.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sacto Jiggle Joint files Chapter 7. Mob related? Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling Every Night, inspired by Eliza Schlesinger.
Going out also, you gotta dress up if you're gonna go out. Tedious, pointless. Guys, next time you see a girl in a pair of heels, ask her how tall she is. She will give you two numbers. She will give you her height and her heel height.
How tall are you? I'm 5'6", I'm 5'9", in heels.
Girls, don't do that. No one's interested in how tall you can be. We're not picking for basketball teams. It doesn't matter. They're just trying to talk to you. After that initial height, it's just mindless statements after that. 5'6", 5'9", in heels. Great, I can go 5 miles an hour, 80, in a car.
And I have a phone number, and I want to talk to you at 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. I keep looking. I don't see an announcement that the United States of America is sending money to Valencia, Spain, that we've offered the Spanish government whatever support they need to help the people of Valencia, because over 200 people have been killed in the floods. Now, these aren't the creeks rising. These are murderous floods because it's velocity and depth. These are as deep as any river, any stream in Spain, in Valencia, and they are at a ferocious speed. They're coming down hills. And when they come down the hill in this densely populated city, it is taking cars and everything else on the street and pushing it down to the bottom of the hill. Not just one car, all the cars. And once they get to the bottom of the hill, they're in a big pile, a big chaotic pile, and destroyed. It isn't like they can send in a tow and pull them out one by one, and gee, maybe once it dries out, it'll be okay. These cars are totaled, thousands of them. Or they're pushed into the tunnel. There they are at the beginning of the tunnel. I don't know what's wrong with me. At the beginning of the tunnel. And then they're shoved into the tunnel, crushed into the tunnel. This is massive. And over 200 people have been killed in these flash floods. Apparently, the government had some warning about this that they did not share with the people of Valencia and the suburbs. They may have known about this coming 2 hours before it did, or grossly underestimated the velocity of the water. But I urge you, go online and search and look at the video of these floods. This is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like this, and neither of you. This isn't like our cute little hurricanes where, you know, a tree fell on a road and 400 reporters from the Weather Channel show up, stand in the rain, say, I've never seen weather like this. Oh, my God. We haven't done a good job of cleaning up Asheville. We haven't done a good job of cleaning up North Carolina, have we? Therefore, my hope for helping Valencia, Spain is small. But if we keep shoveling billions of dollars to Iran and billions of dollars to the Middle East, I'll bet you our ally, our genuine ally, Spain, would appreciate at least some kind words, at least volunteers from the United States of America to go there and help. Cash wouldn't hurt. It's unbelievable. I'm waiting for that announcement. Our empathetic, caring about everybody, White House, transparency of caring. My gosh, we have to care for these people until we do. And then it's oddly silent. I still haven't heard anything from our White House about the follow-up in Asheville. Have you? Still haven't heard anything about the follow-up throughout the East Coast of helping from the hurricanes that hit us. I haven't heard anything about that. And now I'm waiting to hear about how they're going to help Spain. We don't have a lot of really good allies, but Spain is a really good ally, not to mention they have topless beaches. And that's what you and I actually really care about. My number is 888-688-WALT, Walter Sterling. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night, inspired by Robin Hood.
You know who Robin Hood is? Yeah, that Disney movie where Robin Hood's a fox. When you were little, did you think he was handsome? And then, like, your crotch gets a headache?
Are you kidding? That voice and how he didn't wear pants?
There's Mateus, Boom Boom Hollywood, in Hollywood. Has this been an exciting weekend for you? The holiday weekend, the Halloween weekend, has this been a very big deal?
Well, aside from cowering in fear from all those giant skeletons that you've talked about in the past, yes. I've spent a lot of time at the movies, and I saw, I think, Walter and dear Midnight Misfit, probably one of the best movies I've seen this year, and I'm completely flabbergasted that Warner Brothers only has this movie in 50 theaters across the United States. It blows my mind, because it's a movie made by Clint Eastwood, and if there's a name in Hollywood that still would make people turn their head, it's Clint Eastwood. Sure, he's 94, but the guy knows how to make a movie, and he makes movie for people who can actually think and actually enjoy a movie. And it's a fabulous movie. I think it's the best movie I've seen this year. It's called Juror Number 2. Masterfully directed. It's a courtroom drama about a regular guy who's played by the very good-looking Nicholas Hoult and Toni Collette, who looks, well, let's not describe her, looks entirely, because I don't want to be unkind, but she's hell on wheels, as could be explained in this, as a woman running for district attorney's office and a court prosecutor who is trying to try somebody in this trial. And Nicholas Hoult is just a juror. He's juror number two of the title. Except as the court story unravels, juror number two, played by Hoult, realizes that he may have been involved in this very trial, and this man is accused of murdering his girlfriend, and it's possible that Nicholas Hoult ran her over on a location at the same night, and he's getting this harrowing feeling that he actually killed this woman, and he feels that he needs to do the right thing and say something about it, but he's scared. And why is he scared? Because he's got beautiful Zoe Deutsch as his wife, a gravida, about to give a baby, and he can't even be in jury duty that long because the baby's coming in any day, but he's driven by trying to make the choice of what is the right thing to do. And he, his character, has been in AA. He used to be an alcoholic. He's been given a second chance. He feels the guy accused of murder should have a second chance. And so there's a lot of things that go into the mind about the human flaws of our legal system and how justice relies on individual conscience. It's really a solid movie with great performances. Not only Toni Collette, J.K. Simmons in it as a member of the jury, and of course a lot of people first met him as an insurance salesman for a popular insurance company, but he's a fine actor, and when you see him there, you know he's going to have a pivotal part too. So this is great entertainment, and for the benefit of the Midnight Misfit tuning in right now, I put a list of every single theater showing this in the United States on my Facebook page, Matias Bombal's Hollywood. That's Matias, M-A-T-I-A-S Bombal, B-O-M-B-A-L, Hollywood, like the city. That's Matias Bombal's Hollywood. And there you can find the 50 theaters in the United States that are showing this film. Why Warner Brothers is trying to hide this movie, I don't know. It's really great.
Say the name of the movie again.
Juror Number 2 is the name of the film, and it's worth seeing.
Juror Number 2 by Clint Eastwood. And it's only being released to 50 theaters. When was it released?
Correct.
When was it released?
It's just new now. I think they were planning on it as a streaming film, and then Warner Brothers thought it might have legs theatrically. But only 50 theaters? It's kind of crazy. I know Netflix uses that model. They have stuff that they have on streaming, but they want to win an Oscar, obviously, because that means money for everybody. So they show it in two theaters. But this is 50 theaters.
Yeah, I was about to say, when Netflix does it, it's in one or two theaters. And I believe the Oscar people have wised up to this, and they're going to change the rules about theatrical releases qualifying for Oscars. Hard to say. I have a strong suspicion why they feel this way and why they only released it to 50 theaters. Would you like to know?
Of course.
Clint Eastwood is a hardcore Republican.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Trump-supporting Republican. And there's nothing more petty than a vice president of a film studio in Hollywood surrounded by hardcore Democrats. They're to the point where they have turned people who are Republicans in Hollywood to Satanists. I have friends. Shockingly, I have friends in Hollywood who happen to be Republican, and they dare not say it. These are top-level executives making major decisions. They don't let anybody know that because they will be ostracized. And what a tragedy that is. Like today, this so-called governor of the state of New York said that, you know, anybody who, any woman who votes for Trump is un-American, unpatriotic. And I'm like, no. Hold on here. If I vote, regardless of who I vote for, I'm committing the ultimate patriotic act. I'm committing the ultimate democracy act because I have voted. And
correct.
And until moments ago, who you and I voted for was our secret. And it was part of what we celebrated, that we had a secret, sacred ballot. It wasn't like China, where you get to pick one box. You don't tell. And I remember as a kid, you remember as a kid, my parents are very clear. Do not tell anybody who you vote for. And if I'd ask them who they voted for, they wouldn't tell me, because the fastest way for their secrets to get out, it would be to tell a 9-year-old.
It was so.
When mom was teaching me how to go to adult parties, this is what she said. You talk about the weather and the shrimp, and that's it. You keep your big mouth shut. You talk about the weather and the shrimp. And that has served me well. But until an hour ago, it was not like the results of a tennis match. It was not something that was commonly discussed. And certainly nothing you'd ask, and certainly nothing you'd speculate on. That was your secret. That was your business. And it's turned into something much, much sillier and more tragic. What's the name of the movie?
Yes. Juror Number 2 from Warner Brothers.
Juror Number 2, our great friend Mateus, who repairs microphones in his spare time. Where the heck did you get that hobby? Whoever knew a film critic would have the hobby of repairing ancient microphones?
Well, I've worked in radio many, many years. Not as
I can't find anybody to confirm that. I can't find anybody in radio to confirm that. Not one person admits to ever having heard you before this show.
Well, this is the place to be, so I'm glad to be here.
All right, that's our friend Mateus on KFBK in Sacramento. This is Sterling on Sunday.
I hooked up with this girl, and I woke up and was like pretty calm about it, and that also felt like a click to me of like, wow, I'm not freaking out.
Yeah.
And I always thought I would if this moment came. I think I had anticipated it in all the small moments leading up to it, and then when it actually happened, it was almost like the other shoe dropped, like we're good.
Yeah.
Like we've been waiting for the other shoe to drop for so long, and like it happened, and like everything's fine.
It's the people of Walmart on Sterling at night.
Wednesday, in beautiful Higginsville, Missouri, the home of a wonderful Walmart. Walmart being the largest corporation in the entire world. Well, this particular Walmart had a pair of shoplifters. In fact, as we've often explained right here on Sterling every damn night, if you're going to be doing a type of serious shoplifting, do it in teams. And these folks had a pretty good plan. They went, distracted the associates who are just so helpful, but loss prevention, they got wise to them and all of a sudden noticed these women were running out of the store with a cart full of wonderful things from Walmart. They zip right into a waiting minivan. And of course, Walmart, biggest corporation in the world, okay, lots of crime happens there. And guess what? There was a cop nearby. And a high-speed chase was on. Two women and their children picked up. Children probably off to protective services, or perhaps the fathers of the little urchins, following the high-speed chase. Higginsville Walmart really really a terrific place to be. Higginsville, Missouri, underrated vacation choice. After catching the minivan, the cops approached, recovered all the items, and found four children, a 13-year-old, a 1-year-old, 2-year-old, and 9-year-old. The 13-year-old, by the way, served both as a lookout and the getaway driver in the theft. The mothers, 19-year-old Carmen Zaharia and 46-year-old Nargita Durak, booked. And apparently they pulled off a similar heist at a Walmart in St. Charles County earlier that day. For the people of Walmart, this is Vila Hool. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-thru brew making its return, I guess. From the vault, you're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late-night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Sacto Jiggle Joint files Chapter 7. Mob-related? Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Frank Rizzo.
Put that on camera. You're a creep.
Look at you. Here we are on Sunday night going into the Love Truck Stop. We're having a good drive tonight. No bad weather anywhere. These people are whining about, oh, it's so warm. Good. That's fine. It's not global warming brought on by man. We are at the end of a million-year ice age. We're at the end of it. End of a million years. Every year, it's going to get warmer. It has ever since you and I were born. In your case, that's almost a million years. But the fact is that it will get warmer every year, and it has nothing to do with your Chevy Cruze. It has to do with the Earth getting warmer at the end of an ice age. And you were taught this in third grade. How this got erased in your brain, I don't know. My number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I just found out that the number that I was giving out doesn't work. We have to find out what genius was responsible for that, because you see, what I'm experiencing tonight is one of those special things that happens whenever times change, political offices are at stake, the most important election in your history of mankind. Every one of them is the most important election in the history of mankind. And things don't work. That's how I can tell when the economy starts to suck. When basic services don't work. 855-839-1210. I shared with you my deep thoughts about the horrible situation in Valencia, Spain. Is Steve and Selena there?
Hi, Walter. Yeah. We're here.
Okay. Yeah, just let me know anytime. It's fine. Steve and Selena, welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Where are you, in Nashville or someplace? Where are you?
Yeah, so hey, we're in Clarksville, Tennessee. Visiting my sister right now, just like we were over the summer. So we are in Tennessee, and it's a little bit chilly here, so hopefully it'll be warm tomorrow. I definitely miss that nice New Jersey warm weather.
And you you went to a Waffle House.
We're actually here right now. I'm sitting in the parking lot, and I've never been to one before, but I feel like this is a very American, it's a cultural moment for me, definitely getting exposed to something I needed to see.
Have you eaten there yet?
So we had a waffle. I had a chocolate chip waffle, which I thought was pretty good. My sister thought it was maybe not a good idea to eat here. So she thinks I'm going to get food poisoning from eating it, but I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
Where's your sister live?
She lives in Clarksville, Tennessee, right by the military base.
Then how can she say that about Waffle House? This is the first time she's ever been to a Waffle House?
I don't know, because I think if you live here in Tennessee, you have to love Waffle House. There's seven, apparently, in the area. This is the busiest one. So I don't know. Maybe she just... She likes Taco Bell and other places like that, so maybe it's just not her thing. She doesn't really like sweet stuff.
What does Taco Bell have to do with Waffle House?
I don't know. I just think maybe Waffle House isn't her style. Maybe that's why she doesn't like Waffle House.
Waffle House is a miracle. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're open predominantly throughout the South and Southeast. There have been no fatalities that we're aware of. Have you found a Buc-ee's yet?
I don't know. I don't know if we've seen a Buc-ee's. I think there was one.
You're not going to see them.
Maybe there was one.
No, you're not going to see them. You have to know where they are. There's no sign that says Buc-ee's. You have to know where they are.
I saw a Hardee's today.
What does Buc-ee's have to do with Hardee's?
I don't even know what a Buc-ee's is. What is Buc-ee's?
All right. I will have to explain this to you in detail, because otherwise it'll just be very embarrassing. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling on Sunday.
And years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Oh, my gosh. Look at this weekend. Halloween weekend. Yes, finally. And now Dr. Dave's weather. Yes, we are on the powerful KDKA, KMOX. WPHT, KFBK, WSAN. These are giant radio stations that have options. Every one of those stations has options. They could choose other shows, and yet they've decided to serve you properly with Sterling on Sunday. And that's me, Walter Sterling. For many years, I wore a suit, wingtip shoes, Brooks Brothers suit. I spoke evenly. I had PowerPoints, 8 slides, no more than 8 words per slide. That's how you do a PowerPoint. Répété, you do 8 words per slide and 8 PowerPoint slides. That's what you do. That's a good PowerPoint. And if the crowd interrupts you after, say, the 3rd slide with questions, and you don't get to go to the end, that means you've had a successful presentation. Those are my tips for you tonight, my friend. This was a good Halloween, because it had been a number of years now where there weren't that many kids. My gosh, we went through all the candy in about 8 seconds. But what was more interesting to me is there were no store-bought costumes. Everybody stepped up, and there were original, clever costumes. But the other thing that was noticeable, and has been true for years, every kid had a parent. There was a grown-up with every kid or set of kids. They were all with parents. And this is because of Eitan Patz. Eitan Patz. Eitan Patz was the kid in the 1970s who, at the age of 6, for the first time, walked from his parents' apartment in Soho in New York City, a block to the bus. That was the first morning he was going to go from his parents' house to the bus. When Eitan did that, that was not an unusual thing. 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds would go from their parents' home or apartment throughout the country alone to the bus. That's how they got to school. Or they'd walk 2, 3, 4 blocks to school. That morning, you may recall, Eitan walked to the bus with his mother watching from the apartment window, turned a corner to get on the bus, and from the moment the kid turned the corner to this second, he disappeared. And this was particularly striking because this was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid in a artist's neighborhood. At the time, at this time, Soho was not super fancy, super rich. It was comprised of artists' lofts and light manufacturing and art galleries. It was a nice, quiet neighborhood, but sparsely occupied. I'll bet you every other apartment there didn't have anybody living in it. It was still very much a light industry part of New York City. And the kid disappeared. And disappeared. And he was the first kid to go on milk cartons. Yeah, there had to be a first one. It was Eitan Patz. He was the first one to go on milk cartons. And he was never found. And there have been movies made about it, many theories. Somebody was convicted. Somebody was accused, never actually convicted. It's a mess. And I'm happy to report that his parents finally, fairly recently, moved. Went to Hawaii to be with their other two children and get on with their life. But what an incredible story. But that changed our culture. There's no way in heck, because of Eitan, that any 10-year-old is going to go walking the streets doing trick-or-treating alone. In fact, most 10-year-olds aren't going to go in their backyard alone. And it raises the issue of how do we pick a nanny, a babysitter, daycare? And for all the talk I hear, all the top-line talk I hear from candidates of every position in our government saying, yes, and we have to do more for working, we have to do more for child care, more for child care. I've yet to hear any of them say, what? What are you going to do for child care? What are you going to do? Who's going to pay for it? How's it going to be determined? What's the price going to be? And then if you're paying for it, are you liable for it? The government starts paying for child care. Is the government liable for the dependability of that child care? And I have a 12-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 21-year-old. And we lived in the middle of Manhattan for the first 10 years. There's no way any one of those kids could have opened the front door of our home and walked out onto the sidewalk. There had to be eyes on them at all times. When they went to the park, there had to be eyes on them at all times. There was no such thing as a safe place where they could just go out and play. Well, that's a very different world. All right, more of that in you at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. I'm live. Yes, we're live. That's how you're supposed to do a radio show. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-through brew making its return, I guess. From the vault, you're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late-night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Sacto Jiggle Joint files Chapter 7. Mob-related? Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling every damn night, inspired by Cher.
Cher once told me, if it doesn't matter in five years, it doesn't matter. And I was like, thank you, Cher. Truer words. God, I wish Cher had told me something.
Look at that. Look at that. There's Debbie Bermudez, the Vice President of Operations of Imagine Early Learning. And Imagine Early Learning is a successful child care, daycare, what do you call it?
We're a network of child care centers in and around New York City.
And you have 9 of them, right?
We have 12, actually.
Congratulations on your expansion since the beginning of the show. Now, we were talking about the challenge of finding the right nanny, good daycare, babysitters. If I'm taking my kid, my 7-year-old, to a daycare center and interviewing them, looking at them, trying to decide if this is the right one for my child, What's a red flag? What are some of the red flags to be careful of when looking at a child care daycare center?
Well, I would say the biggest red flag is going to be a conversation around their staffing patterns. It's probably one of the biggest challenges we face in early childhood and child care in general, is making sure that we have qualified, adequate staffing. We're regulated, obviously, by state and local ordinances as far as how many teachers we need to have for how many children. But you want to ask questions about what their staffing turnover is. That would be a huge red flag if they were found to be understaffed. There's also ways that parents can go in and check through local licensing agencies and check on inspection histories and see whether or not there's histories of complaint. So those are some red flags that I would certainly look for as a parent.
Now, I'm going to ask you a technical question. Are you talking to me into your phone or on a speaker?
Into my phone that's on speaker.
Turn off the speaker.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Debbie. It's not your fault. You should have been warned.
No. All right. Is that better?
No, it's not better. It's 10,000 times better.
Well, you're there on we the, go. We got
you're
it.
Not on, you're not on the radio. We're not chatting with the on the family group chat. This is the radio. You need to sound spectacular, Debbie.
There we go.
Now, what you just said to me is technical, and somebody in education or daycare would understand everything you just said. I have no idea how to check licensing. I have no idea what the ratios should be. I know to ask about student-teacher ratio, but what's the right answer? What are the right answers to what the student-teacher ratio should be?
Well, the ratios themselves are really going to depend on the age of the child. So that's where it does get a little bit complicated. The question that I would ask really as a parent is, what does their turnover look like? How much longevity do they have with their staffing population?
What's the right answer? I don't have the teacher book. What's the right answer?
The right answer, I would say, is that average turnover within the industry is about 20% of your staff per year. So you really want to be getting an answer that's lower than that. I know at my company, we're actually employee-owned, so we do a lot in order to make our staff feel not only part of the organization, but welcomed and valued. And so we have a substantially lower than average turnover rate. But the national average is somewhere between 20 and 30%.
Debbie Bermudez is the Vice President of Operations, the Chief Operating Officer of a successful daycare child care center. This is a national radio show, and every state has different licensing requirements. I'll bet there are some states that have no licensing requirements. Is that true?
I don't know that there are states that have none, but there are states that have very, very minimal ones. Here in New York City, for example, ratio regulations are pretty tight. So, for example, you have to have one teacher for every four babies in a classroom. That's children under the age of one. Whereas there are some states in the South where you can have one teacher with eight babies or one teacher with 12 toddlers. So it really does change state by state, to your exact point. But every state has some sort of a regulation around it.
What should I expect in terms of the education of those teachers?
Well, again, unfortunately, that's where being in the field, we try to do a lot of advocacy because there are not consistent standards. In New York City, for example, you have to have a master's degree in order to be a lead teacher in a four-year-old class. There are some states, many states, for example, that have really no requirements other than a high school diploma. So one of the things that all early childhood programs should be doing is working through national organizations on advocacy that are working towards making more consistent the regulations regarding teacher qualifications.
One of the things that was a red flag for me when I was first looking for daycare for my daughters was whether or not they'd let me do surprise visits. And if they did not like surprise visits, I did not like them.
See, you brought up your own red flag. You're absolutely right. Any reputable child care organization should have an open door policy. It should be that parents are welcome to come in at any time, unannounced. You don't have to make an appointment. In many states, that's actually regulated. Like, you have to have an open door policy, but that is not consistent. But you're right. That is a big red flag if you get that no right at the front door.
Debbie Bermudez is a skilled daycare executive with a solid, terrific reputation. Who should pay for it? Because when I hear, all I've heard is crap this election season. Mm-hmm. All I've heard is people saying, yes, there should be more support for people with children. What a wacky idea. No one has any specific. I haven't heard one specific from anybody at any level as to what that should be. Should the employer pay for it? Should it be strictly the family paying for it? Should the government pay for it? What do you think?
Well, honestly, it should be a little bit of everything, which I know sounds a little wishy-washy. It's why I try to really make sure that we are not necessarily political, but we're politically aware. And what we have found that really works well, and something that my company does, is we do try to partner with employers. Many of our centers, we run together in partnership with a university or a hospital. We have a couple centers that we run actually for government agencies. Because in many geographies, especially with the increased staffing costs, it's very hard to be able to charge a tuition that you need to charge in order to make your business viable without some sort of additional support. So having a partner in an employer helping to sponsor your program, that's one. Many times we will get either facilities in kind, or they will contribute to the cost of the tuition so the parents are not bearing the entire thing. But then, especially since COVID, we've seen a number of government grant programs that are geared specifically towards child care and workforce retention and bonuses for teachers that has really helped defray some of the staffing costs. But we really do need something on a federal level, much like what is being talked about. Who knows if it will actually ever come into fruition? We can certainly only hope. But there needs to be some support for parents, because the cost of childcare, just based on the staffing requirements alone, is really out of the ballpark for many people. And I think that it really is, you know, obviously speaking as an advocate for the industry, the government really needs to understand what an essential service early childhood education actually is.
Here's a statistic that will stun you. They asked 100 Fortune 500 CEOs what percent of their workforce is comprised of men who have wives who stay home and don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Not one CEO guessed less than 50%. Of those CEOs, not one of them guessed less than 50% of their workforce was comprised of men who have wives who stay home. The answer is 8%.
I believe it, yep.
This gap between the perception of the C-suite and their workforce and the reality of their workforce, mm-hmm, is a large part of the problem. Because you see, those CEOs, Muffy goes to the Greenwich Country Club during the day, and she stays home. But once you get out of the C-suite, that's not the situation. And that's where the gap begins. You and I are talking to the VP of Operations for Imagine Early Learning, Debbie Bermudez, who has given us some terrific information today. And I will post you on all of my social media accounts, which will make it easier for you to get in touch with Debbie Bermudez. Thank you very much, Debbie. Thank you very much for being on Sterling on Sunday. That's the heart of the trouble. The heart of the trouble is that the C-suite of any big company, they have no idea the challenges of the people who work for them in terms of taking care of those kids. And, gee, you can make a few bucks and hire a nanny, and I promise you that nanny is probably taking about five days of the month off. That was my experience. All right, let's you and I talk. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. That's my phone number. I used to give out a different phone number, but that phone number doesn't work. In fact, pretty much nothing tonight is working. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by career goals.
I want to be a gynecologist. If that's so, then I want good reasons why. You are the reason why, Ms. Marquez.
All right, now, I know I will get a lot of emails and questions about our last guest. Her name is Debbie Bermudez. She's the VP of Operations of Imagine Early Learning, a childcare network that has 12 affiliates in the Northeast. But she's an expert on how to pick a daycare center, how to pick the early learning experience for your kid. And none of us are experts at it. You may think you are. I thought I was. Nah, there are a lot of tricks there, a lot of questions to ask. And you can get in touch with her at Imagine Early Learning. And I will get the information and post it on my Facebook page, which is Walter Sterling. There's no M on the Facebook page. Debbie Bermudez, Vice President Operations, Imagine Early Learning. What a good guest. And what a good friend Lou Geiserman is for putting us together. You see, let me tell you a secret about doing this show. Would you like to know a secret? Because I'd like to know some secrets about doing this show. Here you go. I get 5 or 6 emails a day from public relations firms, speakers, bureaus, people who want to book on this show. And the one thing I know about doing this show is that it works best when you and I are talking to each other at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210, on giant radio stations like KDKA and WPHT. Yeah, all of those. And that's when it works best. From time to time, in order to get an actual fact between us, because, you know, I don't deal in many actual facts. I deal in radio facts, which are always to be questioned. Ask more questions. You hear something on the radio, go, really? I didn't know that. Ask more questions. Those are radio facts. Things, bullet points we use, hosts use to get through it, just to get through it. But when it comes to taking care of our kids, well, that's when I wanted an expert. And that's what I got with Debbie Bermudez, who is terrific. And I'll put it on Facebook. You'll be able to get the information about their company, about her, and be able to get in touch with her. And I will have her on again, because a good guest is hard to find. And she was really good. So thank you, Mr. Lou. I appreciate it. Now, what do you want to do? Listen, speaking of childcare, you know the movie A Christmas Story. A Christmas Story is that great story about the kid who wanted a Red Ryder rifle, and Santa didn't want to give it to him because, kid, you'll shoot your eye out. And it was about this childhood in Indiana, this very Midwestern childhood, an actual Midwestern childhood, an actual middle-class childhood. I'm better than this. You know, the way I sound right now, really, no, really, I'm better than this. But the house where they shot it in happens to be in Cleveland, Ohio. The house in A Christmas Story is in Cleveland, Ohio. A smart, enterprising person said, you know what, let's buy this house and turn it into a place where you and I can visit and tour. And then Quentin Schultze wrote a book called You'll Shoot Your Eye Out, Kid, about how A Christmas Story was structured, how Gene Shepard put together his stories. He was the writer and the narrator of A Christmas Story. You love the movie, but what there's no reason for you to know, unless you grew up in the New York area very long time ago, is every night for 45 minutes on the most listened to radio station in North America, and the number one billing radio station in North America, WOR, at the time. He told stories for 45 minutes every night. He told stories without guests, without phone calls, without a script. He told a coherent, brilliant, interesting, engaging story for 45 minutes every night. And he did it from 1957 to 1977. It was a miracle. You'd hear those. It was a miracle. You can hear them on a website called Flick Lives, F-L-I-C-K, flicklives.com, flicklives.com. And there are hundreds of his air checks there. Worth listening to. Any interest in telling a story, writing a story, you want to listen to what he did. It was amazing. Well, this weekend, I went to that house. I went with Quentin Schultze, who wrote the book. He mentioned, I said, well, I'm going to be in that area. Why don't we get together? We got together for breakfast. And then I figured I was going to go to a Christmas Story house and see it and take the tour. I was wrong. Who knew? They didn't just buy the house. They bought the house next door to it. They got a garage and put in cars from the movie into the garage in pristine condition. They have a museum of the movie. But the most incredible thing was they had a gift shop. And when I saw the sign for the gift shop, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a crummy little gift shop tucked away in the corner. And oh my gosh, it's huge. A Christmas Story gift shop is huge and beautiful. Well done, brilliantly laid out, attractive displays. You know it's a good gift shop when the minute you walk in, you want, I want to own everything in here. It was the worst thing I could have seen. Everything I could have wanted was in that gift shop, and a lot of fun. It was really a terrific experience, and I got to spend time with Quentin learning how Gene Shepherd told his stories and how he structured them, and about his life. Things that I didn't know. That was fun. I'll tell you more in just seconds. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling on Sunday.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
And we are here with tales of living with our eight kids in our old house. But tonight we're on location at an Aldi grocery store.
In the Isle of Shame, which I had to tell you about the Isle of Shame because you were completely unaware.
Why do they call this the Isle of Shame?
It's because the Isle of Shame is like Target. Like you walk in and you're here for one thing. And then you grab one and then you grab another and you grab all these finds and you can't leave without like a cart full of stuff.
Can I explain? It's a grocery store, but in the center are these discount items that we're looking at here. For example, a bamboo pantry organizer, $6.49. Right. Is that a good enough deal?
I think it's a great deal, and it's right next to shoes. But the whole point of us being here tonight is that we walked into a store earlier. I walked in the door, and all you heard me say was, hi. And you thought I was walking in the store and introducing myself and saying hi to everyone inside the store, which was not the case. Someone had said hi, and I was returning that hi, which led us to you finding out about what happens in the Isle of Shame when you find a find.
Like, if you find a good deal, apparently people in the know say,
what?
That's what you do?
Yes, and then someone's supposed to say it back, but no one said it back. Now I feel like I should be whispering because nobody knows. My first introduction to the Isle of Shame caw-cawing was me finding something, and I got really excited about what I found, and a woman behind me said, caw-caw! And I didn't know that I was supposed to do it back if I was excited. Like, they have Facebook groups, Instagram groups, all these groups that are all the Isle of Shame groups, so that when you find something, you can be excited about it, not just with yourself, but with everybody else.
How about this? What? A 20-cup rice cooker, $19.99.
Now, I'm not into the rice cooker, but these shoes down here are all looking really good to me.
Let's see if there's an item worthy of the caw-caw.
Okay, I have caw-cawed twice, and no one caw-cawed back yet, but I think...
Right, because I think it's insane.
It's a Pilates ring. Some cork balls. I don't know what they do, but they look fun.
This is what everyone needs. Cork balls. It's a massage ball set made of cork.
Giving a whole new meaning to the Isle of Shame.
All right, back outside the store. We've returned to the cart. We have our quarter back. And what was the whole point of this?
Actually, I didn't keep the quarter, honey, because what you're supposed to do at Aldi is the nice thing and leave the quarter. And the point is, the next time you're in Aldi, go to the Isle of Shame, find something that's utterly awesome, and cuckoo! If you hear someone do it back. And let us know if you find something. If you see it, record yourself cuckooing and send it to us on social media.
You'll find me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-thru brew making its return, I guess, from the vault. You're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Sacto Jiggle Joint files chapter 7. Mob related? Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling every night, inspired by Kat Timpf.
My favorite thing is when I post a picture of myself that is funny, specifically because I look bad in it, and then men weigh in to tell me I look bad in it, as if it hadn't occurred to me. Like, I'd rather be ugly than an idiot.
855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And then I will confess this to you, my friend. When I went into Dollar Tree yesterday, my primary shopping zone, you rich people, good luck to you at Target, but Target for me is like twice a year, something special. The rest of the time, it's Dollar Tree and Save-A-Lot. I was comforted by the fact that all of the Halloween stuff was gone, and it's been replaced by not Thanksgiving things or vague winter things, but by Christmas stuff. Beautifully laid out, even for a Dollar Tree. Fresh, crisp boxes, fully stocked, everything I could ever want. And the natural reaction that you have is when you see that at Walmart or Target or Dollar Tree is, oh my gosh, they're putting out the Christmas stuff already. It's just Halloween now. Oh my gosh, it's just Halloween. I realize today for the first time, if I am totally honest, that I find it comforting, that I like the Christmas stuff out. It makes me feel good. There's the Christmas stuff. There is hope. How am I going to afford Christmas? No idea. But I love the Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's holidays. And the reason why is that they're free. I can participate in all of those holidays just by going outside or just getting in the car and driving through neighborhoods and seeing the beautiful decorations or walking into a church, any church, to the basement, to the ceremony, and participate in those holidays. And even on New Year's, all you have to do is go outside and you can feel as though you're part of New Year's Eve. Not so of the summer holidays. Let me know what you think. See if this makes sense to you. Not so of the summer holidays. Memorial Day, Labor Day, the 4th of July. I can't walk outside and participate in those. Those holidays require an invitation. I have to be invited to your backyard. I have to be invited to your barbecue, your swim club, even your municipal pool. Gee, if I'm not a citizen of your town, I can't just walk into your pool. I have to be invited by you, and you probably can only bring in one person at a time, and I still got to pay $15, right? To me, the summer holidays are oppressive because they also bring up my shortcomings because I'm in shorts. And all of a sudden, I feel fat and not in the right outfit. Oh, really? I needed all whites for this? I needed all whites to go to your tennis club? I can't just wear beige, off-whites, solid whites. Yeah, the wrong sneakers, no black sneakers on the tennis courts. Yeah. It's all coming back to me now. And even in most towns, I can't just go to the 4th of July celebration. I certainly can't go at your country club. I have to be invited in. To me, those are the worst holidays to be single or to be alone. Is there anything creepier, even at a big beach, even at the shore, even in Santa Monica, to go as a single male onto the beach? You feel creepy. Even if you have almost pure thoughts, you feel you really wish you were with somebody. Even if you're with another guy, even if you're with another straight guy, it's still better than going there alone. That's why these holidays I much prefer, because I can participate in them just by putting a couple things on the outside of my apartment, putting a couple things on the outside of the house, and all of a sudden I participate. And I can volunteer. I could help people who need help. I could show up at their homes with other people to deliver meals. And this is the time of year when you, who are a little more fortunate than most, might be asked for help from your friends or your relatives. They might need a few bucks. Reminder. Before somebody asks you for a few bucks or a little help, they've thought about it for weeks or months. It's taken everything they have to get up the courage to ask for it. And my job and yours is to be gracious. If you have a friend who you think might need help, don't assume what that help is. You might be shocked. How can I help you? What can I do to help you? What do you need? And you might be amazed. The person's been out of work for a couple months. And you might think, gee, they're going to want me to pay their mortgage. No, 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 no. They might just say, you know what I need? Could you watch the kids for an afternoon so my husband and I can go to a movie? We just need a 4 or 5 hour break. Or we need some groceries. And they're not even going to ask you for money. Next time you go on a grocery run, next time you go to the supermarket, could you get us a gallon of milk? Because a gallon of milk versus a quart is a change in lifestyle. Sterling on Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Yes, just a ratings grabber machine. That's what Sterling on Sunday is. And here's Dr. Dave. How did the trick-or-treating go, Dave? How did that go?
The trick-or-treating went great, followed by a fantastic ghost hunt at our local museum, and now we look forward to the snow falling in November. You know what, Walt? The day after, it was beautiful. The sky had all the stars twinkling on Halloween night. It was a nice, cool night. I woke up the next morning to 2 inches of snow. How did that happen?
Now, Dave, my question is, how early is the snow? You live, where do you live again?
I live in central British Columbia.
Middle of nowhere.
And middle of nowhere, that's pretty correct, you know. And usually mid to the end of November, and then it sticks around until April, sometimes early May.
Did you ever live in a normal place?
I did, actually. I was born and raised an hour east of Vancouver, which is a gorgeous city, by the way.
Yes,
people
are
not so much, but the city is gorgeous. And I grew up in the suburbs, and usually, well, the west coast of North America, which most people don't know, Walt, is actually a rainforest. So we would get tons and tons of rain every year. You know, it was sometimes out of biblical proportions, 40 days, 40 nights of rain.
And how long have you lived where you live now?
I've been up here just over 9 years, and now, I will never move back.
Now, because of your expertise in UFOs, Sasquatch, do you find that where you live is advantageous to covering these subjects in terms that it gives you a certain amount of geographic protection and anonymity?
You know what? It's actually funny. I actually had a couple of my listeners that I did not know lived in my town actually take in our Halloween ghost tour at the museum. And they introduced themselves, and it was really nice to actually meet a couple of fans there, especially when in my area there's only a real population of maybe 2,500, 3,000 people, which was really cool. And, you know, as far as the weird stuff is concerned, we have a real trifecta here of high strangeness. This area, for some reason, has a lot of UFO activity, and I reckon that to be because this area was developed about a million years ago off of a lot of volcanic activity back when. And there is also a lot of gold here, and there is a theory that a lot of these UFOs seem to be attracted to areas that have a lot of lava rock, as well as a lot of gold. This area is also extremely haunted because it is right along the Gold Rush Trail, which is the trail that starts in Virginia City, Nevada, and makes its way north right to Alaska. And the way I'm looking right now as I stand outside chatting with you, Walter, and the Midnight Misfits, the Gold Rush Trail is approximately about 3/4 of a mile east of where I'm standing right now, and it is haunted as anything. Most people in our area actually claim that their homes are haunted by spirits that seem to be passing through. Now, the third one was Sasquatch. Well, that's a legend that has been right through not only North America, but highly seen in British Columbia, all over the place. Our province is 90% forest. And for people not understanding how big British Columbia is, Walter, it is about the size of 2.5 to 3 Californias. So that's a lot of hiding space for these cryptid creatures.
It's a lot of hiding space. And you and I are talking to Dave Scott, who runs what do we call it? It's more than a show. It's an enterprise called Spaced Out Radio. And you can see his incredible videos at Spaced Out Radio on YouTube. He hosts a Canadian-based radio show that's on, best I can tell, 365 days a year. And he's a great friend of Sterling every damn night. Now, Dave Scott, do you have reports for us?
Well, the UFO community is actually kind of quieted down right now because of what's happening down south with the presidential election in a few days. And the big whine right now on social media platforms is, can we get back to UFOs? Well, the big story, as we said to you last week, was the fact that Luis Elizondo is still taking a lot of heat in regards to a speech that he gave at a public forum, saying that he was handed a photo by a government official a couple of years ago, a trusted government official, and the photo ended up being from Romania. Well, it was taken from a high-rise apartment. The photograph was basically a ceiling light reflection through the window, which Elizondo had claimed was a UFO mothership. He has since come back and said, you know what, ha ha, you guys got it. You know, good job, UFO Twitter, for debunking this one. Sometimes we get it wrong. Bygones be bygones, but the UFO community is not really handling it, including one insider that I have very close to Elizondo, who has stated he thinks there is no way that the man who allegedly wrote or ran the UFO program at the Pentagon, Walter, will now not be able to testify in front of Congress because of this major snafu. That would be like Donald Trump or Kamala Harris basically telling everybody, look, there's blue water and water's clear.
All right, now, you referred to hearings, Alessandro, whatever the guy's name is. You're going to have to step back a second and fill in some of the blanks about who he is and what hearings are you referring to and who might hold them and why we should care.
Well, I forgot the fact that you forgot to you punished me by saying I shouldn't say the word hearings on the air. So I do apologize for that. Okay. What's happening? Luis Elizondo is a gentleman who a number of years ago came out publicly basically saying that he ran the UFO program at the Pentagon and that, in fact, these UFOs, which are claimed UAP, unidentified anomalous phenomena, are very real and the United States has known about them for decades, going past even Roswell 70 years ago. And there is going to be congressional talks allegedly scheduled for November 13th, and it was thought that Elizondo may be one of the witnesses that would be asked to speak at this event, which is really odd considering he has never spoken at any UFO events put on by Congress. But after this latest snafu, it is highly doubtful that he could even walk the halls without his head hanging down in shame.
That's quite a change in, that's a seismic shift in the community, isn't it?
The community is absolutely dumbfounded. In fact, you know, you kind of have to take ribs at people every now and again. And I'm actually going to be developing a T-shirt for my website, spacedoutradio.com, on our store there that says ULPs, Unidentified Lighting Phenomena. And I may put a light on there, you know, maybe a lamp with a nice shade or something. I don't know yet.
All right, Dave Scott, how do we get in touch with you?
You can always find me on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio, on our website, spacedoutradio.com, and we're on all social media and podcast platforms, Walter. We'll see you soon.
Wait. What did your son, for Halloween, what was your son?
If you remember the movie Scream, he was Ghostface.
Good for him. And did you dress up? Please say no.
I did earlier in the day for my daytime job where we all had kind of a little Halloween gathering, but I did not at night. And my costume for the day, not night, was, if you remember the movie The Purge with the lit up mask, the neon mask, that's what I was.
Got it. Dave Scott, you're a good friend of the show. Thank you for being on Sterling on Sunday.
Deja Vu Showgirls, a jiggle joint that is all across the U.S. of A. Very successful jiggle joint that was founded by a feller that, according to all news reports I could find, was connected with the Del Cavante family. That's what the TV show Sopranos was based on. And the Columbo crime families. Yeah, mobsters. Hard to believe. All right. Rancho Cordova, California is a sleepy hamlet of Sacramento area goodness, the home of two, count them, two Jim Boy's tacos. Deja vu, though, this location fell on hard times. Terrible customer reviews on Yelp, including a feller named Julio from Oakland, who said that he handed the bartender $40 to turn over to ones, and she just kept the money. I'm going to give you a helpful hint. When you come into the jiggle joint, have your ones with you. Have them ready to go. And I understand when you're at the bank saying, I want $100 in ones, may seem a little goofy, but you can always say, hey, we're having a garage sale this weekend. So I was looking up Deja Vu Showgirls locations that have closed, and one had closed for the traditional reason most mob-related businesses close. It burned down. Yeah, it's fairly traditional. Deja Vu, by the way, mixed reviews all the way around. Customers felt that the price for a private dance with a wonderful showgirl was a little too expensive. Yeah, $130. Here's the other thing, is that on slow days, they had specials. They talked about the specials, but if you asked the dancer what the specials were, they didn't know. They didn't know. Totally specials. Rancho Cordova, California is a beautiful suburb. I have spent a lot of time in Rancho Cordova. It is a gem of a place to lose such an economic engine. Hopefully someone will bail them out of this bankruptcy and reopen a jingle joint right in that place. From the Champagne Room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
You want me to read this? Well, okay. The drive-thru brew making its return, I guess. From the vault, you're not gonna hear this anywhere else. It's on the way, coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
It's about a quarter past the hour. Let me give you a little secret about my life. I like to put garlic.
800-ADT-ASAP.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
Ultimately, you got the car back.
Yes, ma'am.
And you say it was damaged.
Yes, ma'am.
Who cares?
Oh, look at you. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. This is Sterling on Sunday. It's a live coast-to-coast radio show that celebrates the fact that we get to go to work tomorrow as misfits. We don't fit in, and we don't care. This comic is 73 years old.
I had a colonoscopy, and when it was over, they said, we'll see you in 10 years. And I thought, you will. On Facebook called What's Your Spirit Animal? I got extinct. I'm a gamer. Do we have any gamers? What's your game?
Rocket League.
I'm sorry?
Rocket League.
Rocket League. Tic-tac-toe. Sometimes till 7 o'clock at night. 40 years ago, when I started doing stand-up, everyone told me it was a great way to meet women. We'll see. There were a lot of one-night stands back in the day. A lady asked me to spank her. I asked her why. She said, I'm into discipline. So instead of spanking her, I made her go stand in the corner. That was a difficult relationship. She had multiple personalities, and I'm bad with names. I found this new technique which has improved my memory. I quit listening to people, so I have less crap to remember. Recently, my Uber driver was from Egypt, and when I got into his car, he was talking over a phone in Arabic, only I didn't see any device, so I thought he was talking to me using syllables I didn't recognize, and I thought, so, this is what a stroke is like. Walking can be difficult for me at times. I do worry about tripping and falling, so I wear a helmet. I also worry about looking ridiculous, so I carry a skateboard. I got a brochure in the mail for a prepaid cremation. Nah, it's a great deal. If you die in a fire, you get half your money back.
855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Walter M. Sterling, Coast to Coast. Can you believe it? Many people in radio are saying, how the heck did he get that? He doesn't scream at the Democrats. He only screams at, like, his in-laws and people who work for the phone company. Yes, there's no greater way to test my spirituality than to put me on the phone with Verizon or with your cable company. Pick the cable company. It doesn't really matter. After about 8-9 minutes on the phone with the cell phone company or the cable company, I will lose all vestiges of civilization, and I will resort to a prehistoric state where I just grunt and accuse them of murder. No problem. It's nothing worse. What's interesting is that for all of the promises that we were made about the future, and about how our workload will decrease, there are people working 80 hours a week and dropping dead at work. There's no greater hell than trying to make the printer work. And no greater challenge in customer service, which is adult bullying. You thought bullying stopped when you get out of high school? Pick up the phone. Call customer service. Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling every night, inspired by history buffs.
When was America last great?
For me, I would say the turning point for our country was 1913, when we passed the 17th Amendment.
Phone news, more news, day and night around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your time to Sterling every damn night.
Sterling, every damn night. Good evening. I have a email address, and I also have trouble with my throat. Email address, waltermsterling@gmail. waltermsterling@gmail. Every email I get gets answered. We have a spectacular website, Walter Sterling Show, where you learn how to be a midnight misfit and what's necessary to be a midnight misfit and what your obligations are, because this is not a free ride, ladies and gentlemen. No. Now I'm going to share with you one of my two visions of hell. I lived this one. I'm reminded of it because it happened a few years ago on this very day of the year. Many people foolishly say to me, gee, don't you like it when the clock goes back an hour? You know, you get to sleep in an extra hour. That has never happened to me. My internal clock, true of most people in radio, my internal clock is so hardwired that I never get to sleep in. My body knows when I have to get up. My brain knows when I have to get up, because God help you if you're late in radio. That just doesn't happen. I worked for a program director, a really great program director, who has passed, named Al Brady Law. Al Brady Law was a great boss to me. And but his rule with his disc jockeys was, if you're going to be late for your show, don't bother to come in. You're fired. Don't even think, I don't care what the reason is. Do not be late for your show or you're fired. Because, as in most jobs, the most important thing you do is show up. What I have explained to my about-to-go-to-work daughters is that you, when you go to work, you will find a lot of people who are seem to be just okay at their job, but they've been there like 9 years, but they're just okay at their job. What is it? Well, having managed a few, I can tell you what it is. They show up. There's nothing more valuable to an employer than showing up. Mistakes are assumed. Bad days are assumed. All of that's going to happen, but nothing's going to happen if you don't show up. That's the key. I had a job that went like this. It was a very good radio station. It was WOLF in Syracuse. And I was hired to do overnight. And I was hired like 2 weeks ago at this time of year. And overnight was midnight to six. I've never quite understood why on music radio stations they'll have 3 and 4 hour shifts until you get to midnight, and then you expect one person to work 25% of the day, 6 days a week. 25% of the day, 6 days a week, midnight to six. All right, but I wanted to be on WOLF. I was, 18? And it was a great job. In my fevered little radio mind, it was a great job. And I did the first week, 6 hours. Okay, that's a lot of work. And then the next week was fall back at 2 a.m. And that meant that I was on the air at midnight, 1 a.m., and then 2 a.m. And at 2 a.m., the clock had to go back an hour. And it meant that 6 hour show was 7 freaking hours. 7 freaking hours. Oh my gosh. Now remember, if you're on overnight, radio people, remember, if you're on overnight, you don't have any commercials. You probably don't have news. You don't have anything to fall back on. It's just you and those songs. You and those songs and those jingles, right, Father Drucker? Father Drucker, how did you do 6 hours a night on WARM? How the heck did you do that? Because that was high intensity, but they all did that. Father Drucker, where are you driving? You just sent me a note, a really nice note. I wanted to say where he was. Well, anyway, thank you, Father Drucker, for listening, and thank you for being my friend and blessing this radio show, which desperately needs all the blessings it can possibly get. But imagine that hell. There you are. You're on overnights. You're doing overnights. And by the way, you may have romantic notions about a radio station. There's nobody there. You're in that building alone, and around 2 a.m. it gets spooky. And most radio stations are, today, more of them are in vaguely secure locations, but then they were like in a house in a field and no protection, no security. No, you're in a house in a field. There was a tower. But that was a vision of hell. My other vision of hell is working overnights at a country station and not loving country music, but working overnight at a country station, and then you're talking. And you realize that the commercial machines aren't playing commercials, and the phones are dead, and then the turntables are dead, and you got 4 hours to go, and you just got to go. You just got to talk. That's the other vision of hell. Those are my radio visions of hell. What else did I want to share with you? Oh, yeah. So I mentioned this before, but this is so ridiculous. I see this clownish governor of the state of New York declaring that any woman who would vote for the Republicans is not a patriot. Now, this is an elected official, a governor of the state of New York, which has some women in it. You know, there are women who live in New York, just chastising them for breathing. I don't know how this happened, but it used to be that my job was to vote, and who I voted for was nobody's business. But I felt good when I voted. And when I was a kid and I'd go to the voting machines with my parents, Dad would dress up in a suit and tie. My mother would look beautiful as always. We'd go and vote. And it was a special time. People felt good about themselves. We were doing the right thing. It was right up there with jury duty. And I don't, it's so sad that it's devolved into warfare. But for an elected official to shame somebody for voting in America, I say that's not patriotic. Sterling on Sunday.
Yeah, but I don't think I can bend that way. Oh, hi, I'm J.J. Wilson, and this is Drive Through Brew, the continuing story of Jake and the manager, two low-energy guys who sell beer, candy, and T-shirts at a drive-through. And speaking of low energy, here comes a customer in a very slow-moving electric car. Let's listen.
I'm an electric car. I can't go very fast or very far.
May I help you, sir?
Hey, yeah, I've got a big problem. My car needs a charge. Do you have a socket where I could plug it in? I'm really in a bind.
We have an outlet outside, but it's 110, not 220. How long do you think you would need to plug in?
Well, see, the problem is my batteries are so old. It takes me about 14 hours to get a full charge, and even then, I only get 10 miles of additional range.
10 miles? Where are you trying to go?
I'd like to go home, but I'm not sure I'll make it there this week. I live about 60 miles from here.
Maybe you ought to call a tow truck.
Well, I would, see, but my phone is dead. The battery's real old, too, and I can only make one short call every couple days or so.
Wow, you do have problems. Well, wait a minute. I'll look up a tow company, and you can use my phone.
Oh, that would be sweet. But would you mind making the call for me? I don't hear too well on my phone. My hearing aid batteries are pretty much shot.
His car, his phone, his hearing aids? What else could quit working for this poor soul? Well, listen next time when he says...
Oh, thank you. Your boys are really kind. By the way, just now my pacemaker seems to be running a little slow, so if I pass out, could either you guys run me to the nearest hospital real quick?
That's next week on Drive Through. Word Car speaking.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by George Gilbert.
Get delicious Lancaster brand sirloin, porterhouse, or rib steak for only 79 cents a pound at your Acme Market.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk. The sultry notes in her voice stirred something inside him. Gavin glanced at his watch to calculate how much time they had before their dinner reservation. We have a couple hours before we're due downstairs, so here's what I'm thinking. He downed half his glass in one gulp and set it back on the table. You enjoy the champagne and the view. I'm going to investigate that tub I was talking about. As he inched around her, he brought his lips close to her ear. Don't wait too long to join me, though. He kicked off his shoes and left them next to his suitcase. Inside the bathroom, an oversized tub took up almost half the space. He turned the faucets on, running his fingers beneath the water to check the temperature, then investigated the contents of the closets and cabinets. A stack of thick towels sat on a shelf, and he pulled out two and set them on the sink. After reading the label on one of the small bottles he found, he uncapped it and poured the contents into the tub. Foamy bubbles appeared in the water, filling the room with a floral scent. He took off his clothes and left them in a folded pile on the other side of the sink. Taking care not to slip on the tile, he climbed into the tub, wincing when the hot water hit his skin. Little by little, he lowered himself into a sitting position, the tension easing out of his muscles as he adjusted to the temperature. When he reached for the handles to turn off the water, he saw Olivia standing in the doorway. She had changed into one of the white fluffy robes provided by the resort and held a champagne glass in each hand. "I figured you wouldn't mind the refill," she said. He leaned back, resting his arms along the outer ridge of the tub. "Not at all." She set the glasses down on the flat tile bordering the edge. As Gavin picked one up, she tugged on the ties of the robe, letting it slide off her shoulders and cascade to the floor. He sipped the champagne, enjoying the way the bubbles tickled his tongue while he took in the sight of her exposed curves. The fragrant foam came up to her collarbone as she sat opposite him, tucking her legs to the side of his. "Let me know if the water's too hot," he said. "It's fine." Exhaling, she tilted her head back. "Better than fine. This feels amazing." "You deserve it. We deserve it." Beneath the surface of the water, he rubbed her knee. "We've been working hard lately, and I can't wait to get you all to myself this weekend." Olivia twirled the stem of her glass back and forth between her fingers. "You'd better be careful," she said, a smirk curling her lips. "I might start expecting something like this every time we win a high-profile case." He returned her sly expression. "You just might be worth it." The sudsy water, sparkling champagne, and the close proximity of her body to his all mingled together to send a rush of heat spreading throughout him. Once he finished his drink, he reached over and yanked her wrist. "I don't know why you're sitting all the way over there. Come here." Her eyebrow flicked upward, the half-smile remaining on her face. "Maybe I didn't want to spill my champagne." "It's not like we have to clean it up, and we can always get more." His grip on her tightened as he repeated his demand. "Come here." The tub was large enough to allow her to maneuver without wasting a drop of her drink. She settled between his parted knees, reclining against his chest as the water sloshed around them. He wrapped his arms around her and brought his mouth to her ear again. "Much better, don't you think?" She took another long, slow sip. "Yes, Gavin, you're always right about everything," she teased. "Glad to hear you say so." While Olivia nursed her glass of champagne, he skimmed his palms along her torso, gliding across her slickened skin. Her head dropped back against his shoulder when he neared the outer swells of her chest, but she said nothing. He continued his languid caresses, never venturing too close to any sensitive spots, yet he noted the subtle strain in her breathing. Though she couldn't move too much in her current position, the slight twist of her hips ignited another pulse of arousal. He increased his pressure as his hands roamed over her. Ducking his head, he planted a series of feathery kisses on her neck and shoulder, matching the rhythm of his deliberate strokes. A soft whimper resonated from her throat. Gavin took the empty glass away from her and placed it beside his. "Oh, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling every damn night.